Chapter 27. Wedge staggers down the hallway of the satrap's palace. Pain pulls at him like heavy chains. Fatigue is sucking at him, and no matter how fast his heart is beating, no matter how much adrenaline he feels coursing through him, his bones still tell him one thing.
Give up. Lie down. Give in.
The power failed only minutes ago, and when it did, his shackles fell off like they were a child's toys. Now he's free. Or close to it. Voices nearby, alarmed voices, followed by the sound of marching, clattering feet. Stormtroopers. Wedge winces and tucks himself into the nearest alcove, a narrow space with a ceramic pot that serves as home to one of the planet's jungle orchids. He squeezes in next to the pot and tries to still his breathing. Footsteps closer, closer. The chatter of troopers.
The Admiral thinks it was some kind of distraction.
The other.
Or maybe they just don't want us to leave.
Who is they?
Does it even matter?
Their voices louder until they're walking past. Walking past until they stop. And they stop right by the alcove. Only a handful of steps away from Wedge, hiding in the shadows of this interstitial space. He tenses his muscles, readies himself for the attack. No, it won't work. He's too hurt. Any other day, if he were healthy, he could take out a pair of these bucketheads, slam their helmets together, grab one of their blaster rifles, head for the door. But they'll overpower him in this state. They'll put the hurt on him. Instead, he remains quiet as the stars. The stormtroopers look around. They calm in.
Nothing on the third floor. Moving to the fourth.
They keep on walking. Wedge lets out a gentle sigh of relief as their footsteps recede. His muscles ache. His leg almost gives out, his knee buckling suddenly, and when it snaps back per reflex, he nudges the ceramic pot. It rattles and wobbles, echoing in the hall. The footsteps stop.
No, no, no.
One of the troopers asks the other,
"You hear something?
Back there!"
They start to approach once more.
Looks like I have no choice.
It's fight or get found. Survive at any cost or get thrown back into shackles. He tenses up, planting his feet in the best fighting stance he can manage, and his foot presses back on that pot again. The pot slides back, the grinding of stone against stone. And when it does, the wall in the alcove behind him opens up. A thin, narrow door. A secret passage. It's now or never. Wedge slides past the pot into the darkness of the open space. The footsteps come closer, and on the other side, Wedge sees a stone button jutting from the wall. He slams it with the heel of his hand, and the door closes behind him, just as he catches a glimpse of white armor. Temin sits, shaking. He feels woozy, clammy and gutsick. He tries to keep it together when Jazz tells him that his mother's TIE fighter, the one that saved his life only an hour before, crashed into the Satrap's palace. They try to console him. Even Bones puts a metal claw on his shoulder. But he brushes them all off. Tells them he'll be fine. He blinks back tears and turns away so they can't see. He faces the wall, jaw locked tight, hands trembling underneath the table. The thing is, he's always known this day was coming. His mother, out there in the galaxy somewhere, fighting for the rebels, making supply runs through Imperial territory. Every day he didn't speak to her, which was most days, was a day he knew she might be dead. Her ship floating out there. Her body still strapped into the seat of whatever hunk of junk scrap boat the rebels had sitting in some dingy hangar. That thought sometimes came to him as nightmares. Her chasing after him, her eyes dead, her mouth hanging open. Or Imperials coming to his door to tell him they'd killed her. or a coffin showing up at his door one day, with her in it. And now that day has come, just after they'd made contact once more. As Jazz goes on about how the mission isn't scrapped, about how they still have to do the job, all Temin can do is navigate the all-too-familiar feelings churning inside him like a storm-tossed sea. Anger is the king of those seas. Anger at her for leaving him and giving herself to a cause that was always more important than him. And anger at himself for being so selfish and for not making better use of the time he had with her when she was here. Anger for everybody, in fact. Anger at Sinjir and Jazz for dragging them both into this. Anger at Surratt for being Surratt. Anger for the New Republic and the Galactic Empire and... The sound of chair legs skidding against the floor. He turns as the others gasp. A woman sits down at the chair at the end of the table and pulls back the veil that obscures her face. "Mom," he says, his voice small, so small. Her side is scraped up, and her face is dirty and a little bloody, too.
"You crashed,"
Jazz says. Nora shrugs.
"Turns out TIE fighters have an ejector seat after all."
Temin scrambles up over the table, knocking Sinjir's Pluie sap bottle to the ground. He barely notices. All he cares about right now is throwing his arms around his mother. She returns the hug. It lasts a long while, though he suddenly realizes, not long enough.
"The power outage," Ray thinks.
When the TIE fighter slammed into the palace, taking out their shuttles, the power flickered on and off for a few seconds. And apparently that's all it took. Because now, their prisoner is gone. Wedge Antilles is loose in the palace. The magna cuffs securing him failed when the power did. And an old building like this doesn't have backup reserves. No off-site battery. No supplementary generator.
"This is not good,"
Ray says, stating the obvious.
"We'll find him,"
Adia says, though her voice does not convey confidence.
"I'll put the troops on it."
"Good,"
Ray says. Adia leaves the room, and the Admiral picks up the head of the medical droid, dispatched by Antilles, probably.
"This adds up to one more problem. A big one.
This entire summit has been problems coupling with other problems to beget whole new problems. A mating tangle of errors and cock-ups, fragged from sundown to sunup. She was told that this was a bad idea, but Ray insisted. She cleaved to that idea, the one oft spoken of by Count Denetrius Vidian. Forget the old way. She embraced that idea time and time again, because the old way had earned the Empire nothing but its unintended obsolescence. A new way forward, she decided, was what would heal the Empire and save the galaxy. That's what would secure a proper peace before chaos grew renewed from the seeds cast about by the destruction of the second Death Star. But now she's not so sure. Perhaps the old way is the only way. Assertive control. Authoritarian strength. A steel fist and a black glove. Sloane focuses. She has to find Antilles. Again. The passage is wide enough for one person. A stark difference from the grand hallways of the palace. Hallways large enough to accommodate a line of guards. Maybe even a couple of speeders, if you could fit them through the door. This is smaller, intimate, a passage for the satrap, or the satrap's guests. It's all new to him, even now. Wedge isn't exactly part of the upper crusties of the galaxy. He grew up getting his hands dirty at the fuel depot and working local farms in his spare time. But just the same, it makes a kind of sense, this passage. Certainly the satrap would want a way to move unseen throughout the palace, unburdened by advisors or dignitaries wanting this, that, or the other thing. And Wedge always heard that the cities of Akiva were riddled with secret passages,
both above ground and beneath it. The big question is, now what? He stopped to catch his breath long enough. As he slides down the passage, blue crystalline lights rise to a slow glow as he approaches. And when he moves past, they dim once more, lighting his way 3 meters at a time. A beautiful, if eerie, effect. Sometimes he passes small slits through which proper light shines, the light of the hot day outside the palace's cool walls. Those glimpses of light feel like freedom. It gives him hope. But it's agonizing, too. "So close," he mutters to himself. But then he turns a sharp corner and sees a beam of light with great substance shining through an old window, the glass warped with time. It's not a big window, but it's big enough. He could fit through it. If he breaks it, he could clamber through to the other side, and... He looks through the distorted pane and sees the drop. 3 stories up. And not 3 stories like in some small Corellian schoolhouse, but 3 palace stories. It's 15-20 meters to the ground. Maybe climbing would be an option. Or if there's one window here, there might be others farther down, if the passage continues on. The realization settles into his bones. He could leave. He might be able to make it work. But then what? He goes out into the city, hurt. Maybe he makes it, maybe he doesn't. Maybe they recapture him in 1 hour, or 10, or after a few days. What will he change? The occupation has happened. Something big is going on here in this palace, right now. Running away might save his life, but would it save the New Republic? No. His only chance is to stay here, to remain in the palace, and learn what's happening, or at the very least, find a way to send out a communication to Akbar and the others. He looks out the window 1 last time. So close. Then he keeps on moving. Nora takes a moment to appreciate the reunion. She's tired, after all, and frankly just wants to soak it all in. Her body aches all the way down to the marrow of her bones. Every time she blinks, she pictures the palace rushing up to meet her. She remembers her hands reaching out to brace herself against the console. A dumb idea, because did she somehow think that would soften the crash? Her palm mashed buttons. One of those buttons was the ejector. Next thing she knew, she was up and out, the tie smashing into and rolling across the 3 shuttles. Her chute deployed late, too late, and a hard wind whipped up and yanked her to the right. Then she was down on the ground, dragged across it, the sleeve of her arm torn to tatters, her skin roughed up and scraped raw. So for a moment, she takes the hug and the smiles from the 2 people who are relative strangers to her, but who now feel at least a little bit like friends, if not family. The bounty hunter and the ex-imperial. Even her son's crazy-eyed droid says,
"I am glad your existence has not been reduced to scattered atoms, Master Timmins, Mom."
She laughs. They all do. She pulls Temin to her side and puts her arm around his waist as he stands next to her. "I'm glad I'm alive, too," she says. But she feels it. The moment is over. It has to be. She darkens her brow and says with grave seriousness,
"But we still have work to do. We have to get into the palace, and I think I know how."